Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, January 31st. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Weather Causes MISD Change-Up. Slick Road Conditions Lead to Late School Cancellations. By Stuart Doreen. Worsening weather caused Midland ISD to do a 180-degree turn and cancel the school day Monday, and later apologize to families it burdened by not having a decision earlier. The Midland ISD Communications Office reported Monday that the district determined earlier in the morning that, quote, road conditions were such that we determined there wasn't a need to cancel school. However, as the morning progressed, the weather worsened, and we made the decision to close schools while students were being bused and some were already on campuses, unquote. We realize that making the decision to close campuses while the school day had just begun was burdensome for families, and we offer our sincerest apology, MISD stated. However, as the weather worsened, it was imperative that we make the decision to close schools. Student safety is first and foremost, even though the timing was not ideal. The problem was a patchy freezing drizzle the National Weather Service had not expected until noon Monday, and which plagued the road surfaces early Monday. The National Weather Service reported early Monday that a winter weather advisory was in place for Midland County on Monday morning. True to the forecast, a freezing drizzle caused a light glaze of ice across much of the Permian Basin. The glaze was bad enough that the Midland Police Department responded to approximately 52 crashes by 12:30 p.m. Monday. The Department of Public Safety reported a total of 55 crashes in the Permian Basin before noon Monday, and Odessa Police reported responding to approximately 30 crashes Monday morning. Once Midland ISD closed, other Midland entities followed, including Midland College, Midland Classical Academy, the City of Midland, and Midland County. Other school closures included Greenwood ISD and Trinity School of Midland, which actually announced cancellations prior to Midland ISD. Greenwood was one of the first cancellations at around 7:15 a.m. Midland ISD's happened around 7:57 a.m. Midland ISD reported working with families who already had children at school to ensure their children were supervised until a student could be picked up at a time that was safe for parents to do so. We are running buses as needed and are working with families of bus riders to ensure someone is home, MISD reported Monday. We ask that parents communicate with their campus principal if they have any questions. On Monday afternoon, the National Weather Service reported there was a winter weather advisory for counties across the Permian Basin, including Midland. Freezing drizzle was again expected after 2 a.m. Tuesday, and a slight chance of freezing rain was expected before noon Tuesday. The National Weather Service expects a 70% chance of areas of freezing drizzle with a chance of freezing rain between 7 p.m. Tuesday and 1 a.m. Wednesday, the National Weather Service reported. A high temperature of 28 degrees is expected Tuesday, and a low around 24 degrees on Tuesday night. MISD will continue to update parents, staff, and the community as we evaluate possible inclement weather developing in the coming days, MISD reported. This article is entitled, Operators Report No Issues Caused by Frigid Weather. By Mella McEwen. Monday's frigid temperatures, expected to last for the next few days, is serving as a test of lessons learned during the winter storm Uri in February 2021. That storm brought not only frigid temperatures and icy conditions, but rolling blackouts, and resulted in the deaths of hundreds of Texans. This time, operators say they're seeing no issues from the cold. We haven't received any reports of major productions disruptions, R.J. De Silva, director of the Railroad Commission's Communications Division, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. He said the agency will be working around the clock for the next several days to ensure natural gas supply is available to heat homes and fuel electricity generation. That includes calls with operators, working at the State Operations Center with the PUC, Texas Department of Emergency Management, ERCOT, and TxDOT to resolve problems in real time, and daily calls with the Texas Energy Reliability Council, TERC, to address any requests for assistance, De Silva continued. Steve Pruitt, President and Chief Executive Officer of Elevation Resources and Chairman of the Independent Petroleum Association of America, commented by email, "The greatest safety concern is ice on the highways and roads, which caught most of us off guard this morning. We expected it on Wednesday, but not this morning. Some oil haulers are not operating, which could cause operators without oil pipeline connections to shut in oil wells when they run out of storage. We are hopeful the oil gatherers will resume trucking Tuesday, but Wednesday's forecast calls for more freezing precipitation." His company's power supplies have not been affected, allowing the company to run its electricity-driven gas lift compressors and keep its wells online, he wrote. "Our gas purchaser processor, DCP, remains operational. So the natural gas is flowing down the gas pipeline and NGLs on the pipeline to Mont Belvieu. So far, so good. But we won't thaw out until Thursday." Chevron executives told the Reporter-Telegram by email, "The safety of people and the environment are our highest priorities. We are monitoring this week's weather and have winter weather action plans in place to ensure safe, reliable, and sustainable operations." The company, they continued, strives to bring affordable, reliable, and ever cleaner energy to the world. "We have worked with key contractors and stakeholders so that our infrastructure and assets are in the best position to deliver natural gas when challenged with hazardous weather patterns and temperatures. This includes actions compliant with Texas Railroad Commission regulations, such as enhanced safety protocols, risk mitigation, winterizing facilities, and deploying additional resources." Likewise, Pioneer Natural Resources officials told the Reporter-Telegram they are actively monitoring the weather, and while operations have not been impacted, they are working to ensure employees and facilities are safe. Megan McDonald, spokesperson for ExxonMobil, told the Reporter-Telegram by email, "The safety of our employees is our top priority, and we are prepared to adjust operations to ensure the safety of all personnel. We currently use a number of winterization methods in our operations, which may include cold weather barriers, line heaters, and injecting methanol, an antifreeze-type solution, to help prevent equipment from freezing, among other methods." David Bledsoe, president of Henry Resources, told the Reporter-Telegram by email that the company is not experiencing any problems due to the weather. He also defended the industry from criticism it received 2 years ago during Winter Storm Uri. "The oil and gas industry took a bad rap during Winter Storm Uri," he wrote. "We did not have any downtime related to freezing. We only went down when we lost power. And the recovery was also true. When we got power restored, our production was up and running within a few hours. That just confirms the real problems were not caused by an oil and natural gas shortage." Pipeline company Kinder Morgan stated it had taken steps to prepare for the weather. "We took proactive steps to prepare our assets for the winter storm forecasted to impact West Texas this week," Catherine Hill, senior communications specialist with Kinder Morgan, wrote. "We will continue to monitor the storm and make adjustments as needed. We are not expecting significant impacts to our natural gas operations at this time, and our natural gas storage facilities are well positioned to support losses in supply if they occur." This article is entitled "Funders Wanted Certainty About Hogan Park" by Stuart Doreen editor, Reporter Telegram. More than a decade ago, Jim Henry wanted to partner with the city of Midland on a tennis center that would be unrivaled in West Texas. Thankfully, for him and this community, city leaders knew this was above their pay grade. The city of Midland is not built for projects like the Bush Tennis Center or the swimming and diving facilities at COM Aquatics, not on a voter-approved budget. This weekend, when reflecting on the council's denial of the Hogan Park project, it seemed right to think about Midland's premier park and recreation facilities. It seemed appropriate to think that the Hogan Park project wasn't about conservancies or control, not from a donor's perspective. But budgets that are the difference in just another park or a signature park for Midland. My thought is that foundations and oil companies wanted to fund this project and run it through a conservancy, because they had real worries that a park left without guaranteed expenditures would become, well, just like every other park in Midland, and that wasn't a good thing. If I had to guess, that is why the Downtown Conservancy was formed, because there wasn't any certainty that the city of Midland, and specifically its elected leaders, could be trusted to provide the money to guarantee a project would be funded like comparable projects are elsewhere. Funders were right with the downtown park, and they were right to have the same concerns with Hogan. There are no examples of the elected leaders making sure parks projects are left to succeed with a guaranteed budget. To be fair, there aren't many people inside our community holding our elected leaders' feet to the fire. There haven't been many people making parks and recreation spending as a number one item of a political campaign. There haven't been overflowing calls for increasing budgets and the tax rates to make sure Midland's parks can be held to a higher standard. The fact is, Midland's council decided otherwise when presented this opportunity to create a park that was favored by a contingent that included Tim Dunn, of all people. But they had their reasons, and we move on. I will choose to look at the silver lining moving forward. To a person, the elected representatives said funding was the main issue on parks falling so far behind where they should be. They pledged that even without a conservancy, that this newly elected group would make sure that the mistakes of past councils would be in the past. We will see at city retreats, and then during budget season, how serious each member of the council is. We will see how much all seven members of the council are willing to invest in parks. Last week is over, but the time for real governing continues. This article is entitled, "I Will Not Settle for Gridlock During My Time as Mayor," by Lori Blong, Mayor, City of Midland. Over the past week, as the Hogan Park controversy has swirled in our local news and in conversations at dinner tables and among social circles around town, I have intentionally stayed quiet. But I would now like to address the issue directly. I am deeply saddened by the fact that the Hogan Park project was voted down by a 4-2 vote. I worked for 3+ years on the project with the Quality of Place Conservancy, as well as with City Council and staff. It was a labor of love over countless hours with so many volunteers. I ask you not to lose faith in our community, even as I acknowledge that the Midland City Council made the wrong decision last week. As Travis Stice has rightly stated, this is the latest setback in a string of opportunities wasted for this city to grow and develop into a city commensurate with the economic value it adds to both the Texas and national economies. I am thankful for the donors and community leaders who have a vision for caring well for all, who are committed to investing well in our future. Please stay with us. Ultimately, the Quality of Place Hogan decision has been made, whether we agree or not. The answer is no, and so it is time to go forward. bogging down in the controversy will not serve our community well. Midlanders must attack problems, not people. In the last few years, we have seen a devolution in Midland to name-calling and political stunts which are beneath the high character of our community. This must end. We are better than the personal attacks, and we must hold each other accountable. If we can commit ourselves to attacking our problems with the same vigor we have applied to attacking people, we will begin to solve the real concerns our community faces. We must do better. I ask you to join me in leading Midland to pivot back to graciousness in our public and political dialogues. I am faced with the difficult task of leading us back to unity and common purpose. This Hogan Park vote has made public the fact that our council is not united on several key issues we presently face. But it is my job to work well with my fellow council members. Unity will not be accomplished overnight. It will require my sustained effort, graciousness, and intentionality over a long period of time. I am a person of action and will not settle for gridlock during my time as mayor. You have my commitment to work through this conflict, to call our leadership back to beneficial dialogue. Midland faces needs today which will only be more critically essential to us tomorrow. We cannot squander this present moment with record-high local revenues and wide opportunity to attract dollars at the state and federal level. There is too much good work to be done to waste time squabbling and infighting. Now is the time to move forward, and I ask for your voice in our city, to be one who stands with me and calls Midlanders to attack our problems, not our people. Thank you for your prayers and support. Look forward for future information from me with specific details of the projects and objectives ahead. This article is entitled Council Moves from Hogan Park to Olive Branches by Stuart Doreen. Midland Mayor Lori Blong said she's ready to be part of a unified Midland City Council. But it will take 7 people who are interested in getting together and working together. The comments inside Midland City Hall on Monday were the latest to come from the aftermath of last week's vote involving the Permian Basin Quality of Life Conservancy and a $40 million Hogan Park deal. I think that kind of vision forward has to be shared by not just me, but all 7 of us, Blong said, and I think that there is a path forward to that. Blong made her first public comments since the vote on the Hogan Park deal, a 4-2 denial of a contract with the Conservancy. She said she would have liked to have seen the Hogan Park project not only take place, but that the council come together as a council in representation of Midland's residents. Blong had commented when she was sworn in earlier this month that she hoped city leadership could show unity, even when there wasn't unanimity. I think we need to focus on the professional job that we have to do as city council members and move forward and really address issues that are the biggest priorities for our community, Blong said. Interestingly, Councilman Dan Corrales, during a radio interview with radio station KWEL, stated that he wanted to extend an olive branch to other members of the council. The Hogan Park project debate had really put council members on different sides of the issue. As it turned out, Corrales, Robin Poole, Amy Stretcher-Burks, and John Norman voted against the issue. Scott Dufford, Jack Ladd Jr., and Blong voted for a deal with the Conservancy. Although I was saddened by some of the comments and actions taken after last Tuesday's vote, I am confident that each of us truly has Midland's best interest in mind as we make our decisions, different as they may be, Poole told the Reporter Telegram on Monday. As we move forward, it's going to be important to shift our mindsets away from using words like me and I and start trying to incorporate a lot more we into the way we discuss this council our community, and the priorities we want to see addressed. Maintaining respect for one another and our differences in perspective will be crucial in this council moving forward together. Blong said, there were other issues that the two sides have disagreed on, including Legislative Day's concerns and some criticisms that are taking place on social media that are available for everybody to see. I will not be wading into those things in a public way, she said. I think there's some of these things that are longer term. But I think a lot of it has been fairly recent, and we need to make sure that we address it and move forward with gracious dialogue. This article is entitled Corrales Puts Context Behind Statement in Council by Stuart Doreen. Midland City Councilman Dan Corrales made his statement about comments made during last week's Midland City Council meeting. Corrales made pointed comments prior to the council's voting down a contract that would have approved a Hogan Park project deal with the Permian Basin Quality of Place Conservancy. Corrales said his comments, including when he said, "The city of Midland is not for sale," were made in regard to the conservancy agreement exclusively. Corrales talked about knowing what oil and gas companies and local foundations do for Midland. He used his own family's experiences as examples. My statement in no way, shape, or form addressed donors, philanthropists, or oil and gas, and anyone stating the contrary is inflaming the situation and fomenting division for their own gain. And that is not the Midland I know, Corrales said in the statement. The city is not for sale had exclusively to do with conveying a public park to the Conservancy, who would control the public's access and spending of $2 million a year of tax dollars for the next 65 years, and that was not in the best interest of Midlanders. Corrales used the statement to again make the case against the Conservancy. He said ultimately that he could not vote for the bait and switch. That's the true context of my comment, Corrales said. It was absolutely not anti-philanthropy or anti-oil and gas. I will stand by my principles and choose to vote for what is right for the public with their support, Corrales added. The city council works for all of you, not some of you. We must do what is best for the whole and future generations. My regret is how my statement was manipulated and taken out of context. I will vote as my conscience and oath dictate, so help me God. Dan Corrales put the following statement on his Facebook page early Friday morning. Yesterday, I was afforded the opportunity to put a statement I made during our city council meeting into context. That statement was not addressed to oil and gas or the philanthropic community, or even the donors to the Conservancy. The statement was in regard to the Conservancy agreement exclusively. It is not lost on me as a father of an autistic student at Bynum School, who learned to speak at Mark, what the philanthropic community does. When he plays at Opportunity Park, I know that was made possible by Jim and Paula Henry. The hospital tower I recovered in after a heart attack and the neonatal intensive care unit I toured, all made possible by Rosalind Redford Grover and other philanthropists and the oil and gas community, all helped me understand why the people of Midland are so unique and extraordinary. My statement in no way, shape, or form addressed donors, philanthropists, or oil and gas, and anyone stating the contrary is inflaming the situation and fomenting division for their own gain. And that is not the Midland I know. This city is not for sale had exclusively to do with conveying a public park to the Conservancy, who would control the public's access and spending of $2 million a year of tax dollars for 65 years. That was not in the best interest of Midlanders. This article is entitled, MISD, Other Schools Are to Operate on 2-Hour Delay, by Mercedes Cordero. Midland ISD and other school districts around Midland will open Tuesday no earlier than 2 hours after their normal start times. Midland ISD, Greenwood ISD, and Midland Christian School each have reported that a 2-hour delay will take place on Tuesday in anticipation of continued inclement weather. While we are announcing a 2-hour delay now, we will continue to work with the National Weather Service and the Texas Department of Transportation and reevaluate driving conditions in the morning, MISD reported Monday evening. In the event that we must cancel school, we will inform parents, staff, and the community by 6:30 a.m. Delays and closures due to inclement weather for Tuesday, January 31st. Schools, Midland ISD. Midland ISD will operate on a 2-hour delay. Midland Christian will operate on a 2-hour delay. Greenwood ISD, 2-hour delay. The district will cancel classes if road conditions are worse than expected. Ector County ISD, 2-hour delay. TLCA Midland, 2-hour delay. UTPB, campus will be closed, but classes will continue remotely. Students should check Canvas and their emails for further instruction from their professors. Staff will continue their work remotely as well. Coahoma ISD will start at 10 a.m. Buses will run 2 hours later than regularly scheduled time. Businesses. First Basin Credit Union branches in Odessa, Midland, Andrews, and Lubbock will have a delayed opening at 10 a.m. This article is entitled, MPD Continue the Search for Unattended Child's Family, by Mercedes Cordero. The Midland Police Department is continuing to search for the parents of a juvenile that was found unattended in central Midland on Sunday. The juvenile is about 13 to 17 years old and is not able to communicate what his name is or where he lives, according to an MPD Facebook page. He was found near Ward Street and Shandon Avenue. If anyone has information about his family's whereabouts, contact MPD at 432-685-7108. This article is entitled, Kinder Morgan Seeks Info on Copper Wire Thefts, by Mella McEwen. Kinder Morgan is seeking information leading to the arrest of those responsible for copper wire theft vandalism at the company's CO2 well sites in the Snyder and Midland areas. Recently, the company has experienced several incidents of copper wire theft and vandalism to equipment that have impacted its CO2 well sites in the Snyder and Midland areas. Vandalized electrical equipment poses a risk to the community and employees. Kinder Morgan is asking those with information regarding the copper wire theft incidents to please call Crime Stoppers of Midland at 432-694-8477 or the Kinder Morgan Corporate Security Hotline at 877-692-4643. The company appreciates those that have already called the company and Crime Stoppers with tips. Those with information leading to an arrest may be eligible for a cash reward. Callers will remain anonymous. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Oil Sinks to Its Lowest Since Start of Year, by Julia Fanzeres and Emmanuel John Milton, Bloomberg. Oil fell to its lowest in almost 3 weeks, with technical indicators driving the market's direction, amid a lack of clarity on crude demand. While China's reopening spurred a rally in crude in recent weeks, the market has struggled to hold those levels, as prices test their 50-day and 100-day moving averages. That's prompting commodity trading advisors to sell, dealers said. At the same time, oil traders bullish on Chinese demand are still waiting for the rebound in consumption to ripple from industrial metals to crude. Oil has been bumpy in recent months. With prices supported by demand from China, the White House's goal of refilling the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and the European Union's impending ban on seaborne imports of Russian oil products. Still, the potential for contractions in Western economies has kept prices from advancing too far. Price momentum across energy markets declined through last week, and the short-term trading signal on Brent, trading on the international exchange, switched to a sell. J.P. Morgan Chase & Company analysts, including Tracy Allen, said in a note. This article was written with assistance from Devika Krishnakumar. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, January 31st. Joseph Belden. Joseph Hosey Edward Belden, 94, of Midland, passed away January 26th. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Wednesday, February 1st, at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, February 2nd, at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Joseph was born on November 29, 1928, in Horton, Kansas, to Mary Cruz and Daniel Chet Belden, the first of seven children. Joseph is survived by his sister Catherine Kitty Belden of Oklahoma City, his son Matthew and wife Cindy of Ballinger, his daughters Janet and husband Brian Bristol of Hunt, Susan and husband Benny Ray Fishback of Brownwood, and Cheryl and husband Lee White of Odessa. He is also survived by eight grandchildren and three step-grandsons, five great-grandchildren, and two step-great-grandchildren. Joseph is preceded in death by his wife Doris, his son Patrick, his parents, his brothers Daniel, Michael, Jerry, and Patrick, and his sister Mary Jane. He was also preceded in death by his lifelong friends Tom Ravens, Harry Levine, and Bill Stolt. Memorial donations may be made to the Monsignor Larry J. Droll Scholarship Fund, the Manor Park Employees Christmas Fund, Paralyzed Veterans Association, or Christmas in Action, or the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Robert Michael Hunt. Robert Michael Hunt was born in Odessa on December 27, 1976. He lived in the Midland-Odessa area all his life. Robert is survived by his father, John Wayne Skipper Hunt of San Angelo, and his mother and stepfather, Cindy and Coy Marler of Burkitt, his fiancée, Yesenia Emery of Midland, his daughter, Claire Hunt of Greenwood, two brothers, Wesley Hunt and his wife, Marissa of Albuquerque, Beck Marler, his wife, Haley of Kerrville, four sisters, Haley Standridge and her husband, Samuel of the Colony, Casey Barnard, her husband, Jerry of Kerrville, Jelaine Scott, her husband Colin, of Midland, Laura Macias, her husband Sean, of Moore, Oklahoma, and his grandmother Gladys Glaser of Houston. Robert passed away at his home on January 25th. He was 46 years old. In lieu of flowers, the family ask that memorials be sent to Family Promise of Midland. The family will receive friends on Thursday, February 2nd, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be held on February 4th, Saturday, at 1 p.m. at Mid-City's Neely Campus in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Rufus Charles Tom, September 22, 1937 to January 29, 2023. Rufus Charles Tom, 85, of Stanton, passed away January 29 at his residence. The family will receive friends from 4 to 6 p.m., Wednesday, February 1st, at Gilbreth Funeral Home. Rosary service will be held at 7 p.m. at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, February 2nd at St. Joseph's Catholic Church, with interment following at St. Joseph's Catholic Cemetery. Rufus was born September 22, 1937, in Midland, to parents Edmund Tom and Louise Devonport Tom. Rufus is survived by his wife Edwina, his daughters Reagan Cox, Charlessa Heath Sims, Leanne Russell Jonas, Pam Brad Grable, and Stacy Michael Palmer. 14 grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his parents, a sister Leslie Jean Kiesling and her husband Fate, and a son-in-law Mike Cox. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorials to your favorite charity. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home of Stanton, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, January 31st, 2023. Pfluger secures federal funds for new overpass. The members of the Odessa-Midland Transportation Alliance extended its thanks to Congressman August Pfluger for helping secure additional federal funding for an overpass at the intersection of South Loop 338 and U.S. Highway 385, a press release stated. James Beauchamp, president of the Motran Alliance, stated in the press release, "There are around 18,000 cars that go through the current at-grade intersection each and every day, and a lot of crashes that have occurred in and around that intersection. It's a safety issue. We genuinely appreciate Congressman Pfluger's willingness to help with this item despite the concerns from the overall legislation. Pfluger's efforts on this project will benefit our area for many years to come. The project funded is the overpass for the intersection of South Loop 338 and U.S. 385 in Ector County. The project has a total cost of approximately $28.5 million. Currently, there are $21 million in construction funds allocated to the project, along with $2 million in local funding from the City of Odessa and the Odessa Development Corporation. The $5 million in additional federal funding will be utilized by TxDOT to construct the overpass. This also helps in the process of developing Loop 338 out to more of a freeway design. That's certainly been a priority for Motran, and I know it is something a lot of drivers in Odessa would like to see," Beauchamp stated in the press release. Beauchamp added in the press release, "The project was delayed due to, in part, of the available funding being moved to fund the Yukon and SH-191 overpass, which came in above original estimates. The funding secured by Congressman Pfluger is important because it fully funds this project to get it back on track sooner rather than later and help make that an area a whole lot safer. It is also timely, as having this overpass will provide a much safer reliever route along South Loop 338 in Odessa as interstate improvements begin on the segment of I-20. The funding request submitted by the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance in 2022 will go directly to TxDOT to be used for construction of the actual project and will help provide additional funding that frees up existing resources within the Midland-Odessa metropolitan boundaries. Brr, it's cold outside. Weather still coming Tuesday, Wednesday. UTPB remote on Tuesday. ECISD delayed 2 hours. Keep your ice scraper out because the Monday freezing temps were just a tiny preview of what weather experts say will hit Tuesday and Wednesday and possibly into Thursday. Monday morning saw freezing drizzle all over the Odessa Midland area, forcing school closures and numerous wrecks on icy roads. The Ector County Independent School District initially opened schools as weather between 4 a.m. and 6 a.m., which is when the determination to close schools is made. Was cold but not icy. However, freezing sleet and rain by about 7:15 left Road Slick and ECISD closed shop for the day. The decision on Tuesday school day is a two-hour late start, but district officials will determine by 6:30 a.m. if the entire day should be canceled and will alert parents. UTPB via Facebook indicated that classes will be remote only on Tuesday, but reminded students to check Canvas and email. On Monday, city and county offices, as well as the courthouse, were closed by about 8 a.m. due to the weather. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett issued a press release Monday afternoon that stated county offices will also be closed on Tuesday. The National Weather Service in Midland says do not expect normal conditions to return until later this week. But for Tuesday and Wednesday, freezing conditions are expected, and possibly Thursday morning. We had a pretty strong cold front that came through late Sunday and early Monday that's been working its way through the region. Forecaster David Munyon at the National Weather Service in Midland said, along with that, we've had increasing moisture in the low levels, so that ultimately combines to create is freezing drizzle. It's not freezing rain or snow. You get small droplets, that small, to the ground like rain would. Ultimately, it has the same effect where you have moisture hitting the ground when we have temperatures in the low to mid-20s, which will then freeze and create a glaze of ice on the surface. Conditions did improve in the early afternoon hours on Monday, with visibility returning and low-level moisture moving out. However, much of the freezing low-level moisture should return Tuesday morning. Unfortunately, as we get into tomorrow, we'll see pretty much the same thing, Munyon said. We'll see a little more moisture and probably another round of that freezing drizzle overnight tonight and into tomorrow morning. I expect road conditions tomorrow to look pretty similar to what they were Monday. The real system causing all this will probably get closer as we get to later in the day tomorrow and earlier on Wednesday. That's when the Permian Basin should expect freezing rain. That's when we'll get more moisture rather than just low-level moisture, Munyon said. That'll create regular freezing rain, not just freezing drizzle. It's possible we could see ice accumulations when all is said and done come Wednesday, of at least a tenth of an inch across a large portion of the Permian Basin, maybe to a quarter inch as we get closer to the far eastern portion of the Permian Basin. We're going to see some sketchy conditions. Munyon says the greatest concern should be Tuesday night and Wednesday, where Odessa is expected to get consistent rainfall and creating ice to much higher levels than that was seen on Monday. The high on Monday was 30 degrees with a low of 21. The Department of Public Safety reported 55 accidents from midnight to noon on Monday. The Odessa Police Department reported working about 30 crashes before 10 a.m. Monday. The forecast. Tuesday is expected to be mostly cloudy with a high of just 29 and a low 22. In addition to freezing rain, Wednesday is expected to see a high of 38 and a low of 24. Conditions aren't expected to get better until Thursday, where the high will be 55 and a low of 31 with a 60% chance of showers. After a brief reprieve this afternoon, the deteriorating will begin again tonight, and that won't probably improve again until maybe Thursday. There's a chance that portions of the area will rise above freezing Wednesday afternoon, more like in the southwestern portion of the Permian Basin. We are currently forecasting high of around 35 degrees Wednesday afternoon. That could give a chance for the rain as tree rain rather than freezing rain. But portions of the northern Permian Basin could see extended freezing rain from Wednesday afternoon to Thursday morning. Really, Thursday morning and afternoon is where we see the conditions start to return to normal. Friday is expected to be sunny with a high of 58 and a low of 29, while Saturday is expected to see a return to the 60s with a high of 63 and a low of 36. It's the second consecutive week that a system has moved through the Permian Basin. Last week saw another system that brought snow to the northern portion of the Permian Basin, including Seminole, Odessa, and Midland, remained intact from the worst conditions last week, as snow ended up melting after hitting the ground. It's not clear if another winter storm system is expected next week, but that could change over the next few days. As far as that goes, we are not too concerned at this time, Munyon said. By this weekend, we should see temperatures back in the 60s and maybe upper 60s by next Monday. We'll probably have another system next week, but right now it's not expecting too much as far as winter weather, but it's still too far out to be sure. Icy conditions plagued the roads throughout Odessa Monday. As of Monday morning, there were roughly 30 crashes on Odessa roads. The Odessa Police Department and TxDOT has been urging motorists to be careful and to use extreme caution while traveling on Interstate 20, Highway 80, and Highway 191. On Monday, Interstate 10 and 20 were being treated for ice as well as bridges and overpasses, according to a press release from TxDOT. We have morning calls that we talk about what the weather is going to be like that day and how we should prepare for the next day, TxDOT Public Information Director for the Odessa Permian, Marian Cedillo, said. We're out with the trucks and putting brine on the streets, mostly the overpasses and bridges on the interstate, so those can have a little more traction. TxDOT is still strongly advising people to stay off the roads and to be careful if they must travel over the next few days. We are expecting more participation for tomorrow and the next day, Cedillo said. Cedillo says the biggest concern has been Tier 1 streets, which are the bridges and overpasses along the interstate, in addition to other hot spots around town that are more prone to being slick and are also being treated. Cedillo urges drivers to go slow on the roads. The advice is if you have to be on the road, make sure you have enough time to get to where you need to go so that you're not in a rush, Cedillo said. Make sure you leave enough space between yourself and the person in front of you so that you have enough time to react and brake in an appropriate amount of time. Just because it looks safe, like it's safe, doesn't mean that it is. Current road conditions can be found online at https://drivetexas.org/pound/10/31.7352/102.1702.1707?false. Soup Shelters Curbside Bistro, 3816 Andrews Highway, will offer a free cup of soup on Tuesday for those who need it. The Salvation Army Shelter at 810 East 11th Street is open with sign up at 6 p.m. The Ector County Sheriff's Office Warming Shelter at 2261 East Sycamore is also open. Call 335-3050. Hallmark resigns after claims she was bullied. Downtown director spoke out about Mayor Councilman's alleged actions. After a tumultuous 6 weeks, Downtown Odessa Executive Director Casey Hallmark has resigned. Hallmark turned in a 2-week notice to Odessa City Manager Agapito Bernal Monday. Bernal thanked her for her service but informed the native Odessan her services were no longer needed and Monday would be her last day, not February 10th. Bernal also informed Hallmark he would not be paying her through February 10th. Hallmark was named Downtown Odessa Executive Director just over 1 year ago. The nonprofit organization, which is partially funded by the city, is comprised of 3 employees, is responsible for such events as the Firecracker Fandango and Parade of Lights, but is also committed to recruiting businesses to the downtown area using facade and infrastructure grants funded by the Odessa Development Corporation. Earlier this month, Hallmark told her board, which is filled with city council member appointees, Downtown Odessa earned a profit for the first time in 6 years. Over the last 5 years, the organization has lost an average of $5,000 annually. This past fiscal year, it made $55,000. She attributed the success in part to better marketing efforts, more event sponsorships, and additional vendors. The announcement came shortly after Hallmark made headlines in mid-December for accusing Mayor Javier Hoven of bullying her and newly elected city council member Chris Haney of screaming at her. During a January 10th city council meeting, Hallmark went into more depth about her allegations, accusing Haney of using the F word during a tirade. The explicit nature of her disclosure prompted several people to demand she be disinvited from an Ector County Republican Women event where she was scheduled to speak about downtown Odessa's success. Hallmark again made headlines when she filed a complaint against Ector County Republican Chairwoman Tisha Crow for calling her a disgrace on Facebook after she dropped the F-bomb. Crow was named to the Downtown Odessa board by Haney, who had joined the board the same night Hallmark launched her allegations against him. The city hired an outside law firm to investigate Hallmark's allegations against the mayor and Haney, but Charles Hurst, the city's human resource director, said in a January 18th memo, Hallmark had no recourse against Crow. Crow has not responded to requests for comment. In her resignation letter, Hallmark said she didn't think the current climate was a good fit for her, and she's accepted a position elsewhere. I was so proud and excited when I was hired for this position just over a year ago. Little did I know this would be the absolute best experience and at the same time the absolute worst, Hallmark wrote. While she's proud of the work she, event coordinator Savannah Woodward, and executive assistant Martina Marquez have accomplished, Hallmark wrote, "The treatment I have received from our elected officials have made it impossible to continue in this role." Woodward turned in her two-week notice Monday too, but Bernal also informed her Monday would be her last day. Hallmark had intended to spend the next 2 weeks creating lists and guides for her replacement and working with her board to ensure a smooth path forward. She wrote they were in the middle of a few great projects and several events are coming up. In addition to the State of Downtown Odessa event February 23rd, and the Downtown Egg Hunt, discussions are underway for the creation of a downtown entertainment district. The City Council issued $7 million in certificates of obligation for downtown improvements in 2019, and in November they voted 4-3 to design and oversee a festival street on either Texas Avenue or Jackson Street. City offices were closed Monday, but when asked via email for a statement regarding Hallmark's departure and his decision regarding her last day, Bernal wrote, "Losing or gaining someone in the organization affects the entire team. Collectively, I want the organization to be successful and provide exceptional customer service. Thank you for your concern and stay warm." In a recent story about Downtown Odessa's successful year, Board President John Harriage said Hallmark was a great leader. "Our attendance is higher than ever before. We have more people than ever before. Fandango, we blew it out of the park. I mean, blew it out of the park. It was the largest footprint we've ever had. But again, it still wasn't big enough. We need to expand this year," Harriage said. "Casey is super organized. I've never met anyone so organized. I mean, she's got like a color-coordinated index for everything, so everybody knows their job. They know what to do. She's busted her ass. She's done a good job." Back on December 13th, Hallmark spoke out against the terminations of City Attorney Natasha Brooks and City Manager Michael Marrero. During that meeting, she also alleged Hoven called her a crazy liberal, and that he also told her the police department is full of murderers and she needed to watch her back. She further alleged Haney screamed at her at the Parade of Lights event about the banner which was being used for his vehicle. Haney has repeatedly denied the allegations. On January 10th, when Haney again asserted his innocence and objected to Hallmark's allegations being made part of the official record of the meeting, Hallmark stood before the council again. This time, Hallmark asked Haney, told her, "I am not an expletive council person. I am an expletive councilman, and I will be referred to as such." Hallmark said, Haney denied the allegation, citing his Christian faith. He said he merely told Hallmark he preferred to be addressed as a councilman. "I was accused of being a bully, intimidating, and screamed at by a young lady, and I would like it to be known right here I don't yell." Haney said during last week's council meeting, "I don't have anybody to yell at. I don't have any reason to yell." Hallmark had also gotten sideways with council member Denise Swanner over the Parade of Lights banners. According to emails obtained by the Odessa American under the Texas Public Information Act, Hallmark emailed council members on November 22nd telling them downtown Odessa wanted to give them the VIP treatment and show them that their banners, what their banners would look like. Swanner responded, "Will you have them done as councilman or councilwoman? Councilperson is proper." When Hallmark said they'd researched past banners and discovered they'd always used councilperson, Swanner responded, "My request wasn't a question. I would like to be referred to as a council member or councilwoman." Council member Mark Mata, in the same thread, took the opportunity to tell Hallmark he was disappointed she was friends with Odessa whistleblowers whose sole purpose is to try to discredit myself, Councilmember Denise Swanner, and Mayor Javier Hovind. "While you are free to do as you like on social media, I am also free to respond accordingly." Mata said he regretted canceling his participation in a race in order to attend the parade and support downtown Odessa. He declined her offer of a banner. "I have my own banner and will have family members carrying the banner." According to a public information coordinator with the City of Odessa, the Communications Department, Legal Department, and City Secretary's Office could not locate any social media policies governing city employees.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.